broadcasting from a device built by a teenage genius using leftover parts from an erector set. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to this edition of the Echo Chamber. Jason Hunt here, along with a full panel of guests today, joining us through the magic of the internet. Here on the team, Jennifer Wise and Dan Handley are with us.
Hello.
And
also joining us from abroad, various different places around the internet, are special guests. First of all, Hugo Award winner Ellen Datlow, editor and responsible for a lot of horror fiction, science fiction, sent me my very first rejection letter.
Oh, did I?
Also joining us from New York, John Ordover, former editor of Star Trek novels for pocketbooks back in the 80s and 90s, and author...
90s and 2000s, but go on.
The 90s and the 2000s. Okay, I apologize. I need to get my facts straight. Also on the phone, Greg Cox, who is an author of various franchise tie-in novels as well as an editor at Tor Books. And Dr. Ian Scobel, who is professor of philosophy at Bridgewater State University. And the reason that he is here to give expert opinion is because he had some very interesting comments on a thread on Facebook, which is where this whole thing started. John had posted back in early February, and I'm going to read here a quote. "The Star Wars series does not take place in the future. It could not possibly be clearer that it takes place a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. It literally says so in bright letters on the screen, just saying." And from that very simple, innocent comment came a very, very, very long discussion on the thread that involved Dr. Scobel and Greg and several others talking about, one, the fact that Star Wars does not take place in the future, and that basically morphed into... Is Star Wars science fiction? And that morphed into, well, what is science fiction? So I thought it would be a good topic for a number of people who are involved in the creation of science fiction to talk about and figure out if there is a fixed set of criteria for the genre. And Dr. Scobel uses genre in a number of his presentations discussing philosophy, and I thought he had some really interesting points on this as well. So here we are. And I'm going to referee. I'm going to let everybody just kind of jump in here. And let's start with the first question of whether or not Star Wars is science fiction, just simply because a lot of people have gone back and forth about that, whether Star Wars is science fiction, it's fantasy. Is it a combination of the two? There are spaceships, but there's also magic. And so... Let's start there.
Well, I think it's a combination. But my question is, and I may not even want to get into this, but why on earth did Lucas start saying that it took place long ago? I'm not sure why he stated that and why he said, I mean, it's impossible. It's not the past. But I don't even know. This is a whole different philosophical thing, though. Why did he say that?
Well, I've had the hunch for years. As remember, he plotted out all 9 movies way in advance.
Right.
And it's my feeling that he always intended it to end in the 9th movie with one person from the Rebel Alliance, one person from the Empire, crash landing on a small blue planet, one of them being named Adam and the other being named Eve.
No. We will give George Lucas benefit of the doubt and assume he did not have an idea. That's stupid. Okay.
Midichlorians. But go on.
I want to ignore the whole that. I'm sorry, Ian. You were the one who brought that up, right? The past thing on there. I'd like to ignore that because I think that's bullshit.
Well, I think one of the things.
Look at Star Wars, as the elements of it. And some of it's science, and some of it's not.
Well, I think Lucas may have been setting it up. You know, given the fact that it was modern mythology, I think it just adds a bit of an aesthetic to it, to say mm-hmm. this is something that happened a long, long time ago, because it does give it that air of
mythic.
Camelot and King Arthur and the Greek myths and that sort of thing. I'm not sure he was thinking very much past that.
I assume that the long time ago thing was just to give it more of a fairy tale feel and to not get locked into, oh, this is the 23rd century and you can draw a direct line from NASA to the Millennium Falcon. Real world, and we're not talking about post-atomic holocausts. It's a whole other place, and don't try to figure out if, you know, the Empire is the Russians and the Rebellion of the Americans. It's it's a whole different planet, and we don't worry about that, you know.
Well, and even as a kid, you know, I'm a bit of a younger generation speaking out here, and as a kid when I was growing up on the Star Wars movies, that whole long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, because it is so like the fairy tales of a long time ago in a kingdom far away, like that, I think, just really kind of brought the younger element into it and kind of really activated the imagination. So I don't necessarily think of it also in terms of, oh, it happened thousands of years ago in a different galaxy. I think that it's just kind of setting a stage that this is going to be an imagination play thing. This is
also
going to require to step out of realism.
I think that George Lucas was inspired by Akira Kurosawa when he made these movies.
Uh-huh.
And Kurosawa did samurai era, did feudal Japan. And so that also puts it into that kind of mindset that he was inspired by to begin with.
Yes. I would like to say that whether Star Wars is in the future or not has nothing to do with whether or not it's science fiction.
True.
Absolutely.
I agree. Even if it is in the past, it still should constitute science fiction.
Absolutely.
If there are laser beams and atomic energy in a movie set in Atlantis, it's science fiction, even if it's set 5,000 years ago.
Yeah, well, it's science-based and it's fictional, so even just on the bare-bones terms, you've kind of got it right there. But
I don't know. I have problems with that a little bit. It depends on the story, I think.
Well, originally,
part of science fiction is the future. I mean, it's dealing with the future and the possibilities of the future. That's why there's also, you know, our alternate history is science fiction or fantasy. I mean, it's a subgenre that's been under science fiction, and, you know, this question, well, should it be, or is it just kind of fantasy? You know, so it's back into how do we define science fiction?
In the early days of science fiction, it was basically, the definition would have been science-based fiction. That the term, I guess, the definition has, or the connotation, I should say, has expanded quite a bit since then.
Yes.
Well, I will give now my feelings with Greg. It's sad to realize Greg has now heard from me for literally decades.
We've been arguing this stuff for years, yeah.
Science fiction is that branch of storytelling that deals with robots, aliens, space travel, time travel, alternate universes, is set in the future, or deals with the impact of new technologies on humanity. And if something has any of those totes, then it falls somewhat at least into the science fiction camp.
Mm-hmm. This is what we were arguing about the other day. I like to place the emphasis on the last element of your disjunction there, that it's really story-based and concerns the effects of the technology on the human condition. So for me, I guess I just like a slightly tighter definition where the mere presence of a robot isn't enough, but the story has to be about what the technology or the science is telling us about the human condition, how it's affecting the human condition, that there's something about humanity that the change is affecting, that's what makes it science fiction. The fact that there's a piece of tech in there wouldn't be enough.
I think one of the things too, and you could make this, because that discussion has circled around TV shows like Person of Interest, where you have an artificial intelligence, you have a machine, basically a robot, if you will, if you want to broaden it, and the question then is, well, does that make, you know, does the premise of Person of Interest make it a science fiction show? And I would say that it's probably not genre. Just simply because it's more action thriller mystery type of, you know, it's a cop show more than it is a science fiction.
It doesn't matter.
Show.
It's still partly, it's still science fiction. I mean, it doesn't mean, I believe it is science fiction.
Crossover genre.
And there's no reason why you can't combine science fiction with horror, science fiction with mystery and everything else. You know.
Exactly. These aren't contradictory. This debate is not a new debate. It goes back to Jules Verne versus H.G. Wells. You know, Jules Verne would have argued that H.G. Wells wasn't writing real science fiction because there's no such thing as time machines or invisibility serums. And also the line between horror and science fiction. I mean, is The Island of Dr. Moreau horror or science fiction?
It's both.
The correct answer is it's both. You know, War of the Worlds is horror and science fiction. You know,
who goes there?
But yeah, I'll just meet you with Ian's definition there, because I think you could do a science fiction story, and have there have been lots of them, that's set entirely among aliens in an alien culture and has very little whatsoever to do with specifically how humanity is coping with something. And that would be science fiction.
Well, using aliens would probably be sort of a stand-in for humanity.
I think at that point it would still be a commentary on humanity.
Yeah.
We shouldn't confuse like seriousness of intent with, you know, genre. I like to make the analogy, if you step away from science fiction and look at Westerns, you know, there are serious adult Westerns that deal with issues of, you know, manifest destiny and Western expansion, and then there's Roy Rogers and the Lone Ranger. But no one says that Roy Rogers isn't really science fiction, isn't really a Western, because it's not dealing seriously with historical issues.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I tend to think of science fiction as being a broad umbrella term that includes everything from, you know, the highbrow stuff to, you know, Buck Rogers, Flash Gordon, and Edgar Rice Burroughs. You know, space opera is one kind of science fiction. Hard science fiction is one kind of science fiction. But science fiction is a big umbrella term.
Mm-hmm.
Where people get into trouble, I think, sometimes, and where you get these arguments that, oh, Star Wars isn't science fiction, it's space opera, is people who think that hard SF is the only real science fiction and space opera is something different.
Well,
I think space opera is a subcategory of science fiction.
I think it's hard SF. Space opera. I think some space opera is just wish fulfillment. I mean, it's not based on any reality, any real science. With Outlanders, that movie with Sean Connery, that, you know, that
Highlander.
No, Highlander.
Outland. Yes.
I mean, you know, when you're trying to, I mean, I know that's a movie, so that's a whole different thing. But if you're trying to do science fiction and you make stupid things, you do stupid things in there that are impossible, and physiologically, or you shoot a hole in a spaceship and nothing happens. I mean, that's not. I mean, how can you?
I would argue that that's bad science fiction.
All right.
We shouldn't make science fiction, you know, oh, only the good stuff deserves the label of science fiction.
That's like putting...
You know, there is good science fiction, bad fiction, science fiction, and, like, horror. There's really good horror, and there's really horrible schlocky horror. But yeah. It's all horror,
have,
you know.
You can have good science fiction with bad science.
Yeah.
Okay. You can have good science and bad science fiction.
So, what if,
I would say... Go ahead, say that again, Ian.
I'm agreeing that we shouldn't have the definition be a stand-in for an appraisal of whether it's good or bad. We want to be able to define the genre, but then still be able to say, well, this is a good example and this is a bad example.
But when you have bad science in a story like that, that does not exclude it from being science fiction.
Right.
No,
now, okay, so let me ask this. Does a particular story have to have a preponderance of a certain number of elements when it crosses a threshold, or, you know, and then becomes genre, or if it's got one thing in there, it's science fiction?
If any of them are there, it's science fiction.
John thinks it's good if it's got anything.
I don't necessarily agree that if any of them are there. Like, one of my favorite books is a dystopian future, blah, blah, blah. It's called The Wanting Seed. It's pretty similar in vein to Brave New World, but it's very hard for me, even though it's got the futuristic element, the new technology element, and all of that stuff, it's so hard for me to themes in, it's more, you know, it's a drastically different style in the way it's presented than what you think of as your traditional science fiction. So I don't know, I don't think necessarily just saying if one thing's there, it's science fiction. It doesn't seem to mesh as well for me.
Another interesting question would be, when we talk about science in fiction, making it science fiction, would then a television show like ER be considered science fiction when it's packed with the medical science in a fictional setting?
Not unless the medical science is something that doesn't exist today. Or I mean, yes, I see what you're saying, and yes, there are stories.
I think there has to be a level of extrapolation, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there are stories about science. I mean, I've published stories about science that aren't really science fiction, even though, yes, they're about science and they're fiction. Well, but that isn't what we're, that's not science fiction in my mind, even though I might have published it.
I would even be hard-pressed to say that sci-fi's recent movie Ascension, I'd say it stretches the whether or not it's science fiction at all, because it's, you're talking about a space program and a generation ship, but it never actually, you know, they never actually go into space. They're not actually on a spaceship. There's the conceit that it's a futuristic, quote unquote, type of story, but it's very, very thin to me.
It really feels like science fiction because you've got people running around in what appears to be a science fiction environment for 87% of the movie, you know.
It's like
I would say it also fails the can I actually watch all of this without leaving the room?
Well, there is that too. Well, and I think and Caprica struck me the same way. I had a real tough time with Caprica. I couldn't watch it because I was expecting a Battlestar Galactica series, and what we got was a soap opera that had science fiction pastiche put on top of it. And sure, we got the robots and we got the artificial intelligence and the holographic environment, but the bulk of the story was family drama and teen angst, and I had a tough time swallowing that show because it wasn't science fiction enough, I guess.
But if you dismiss that as science fiction, then why can you accept space operas that are ridiculous?
Well,
I don't see the difference then. If its premise about this space adventure and the trappings of science fiction are there, but they're not really real, I mean, they don't work within the context, and how can you possibly consider that they're both the same then?
Divorce in space is not science fiction.
well, basically, what you have is crossover genres. We've talked about crossover things like horror and science fiction, that type of thing. Why can't you have romance in science fiction or comedy in science fiction anything like that?
Okay.
Aliens, which is Western and science fiction.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that Caprica was not science fiction, but I guess it brings in that question of the threshold. How much science fiction does there need to be there before a show is or is not? And you know, does the focus need to be on the setting and the elements that are there, or does that matter? I mean, science fiction is such a broad term, and it's such a loose genre in terms of what all it includes, and then you've got all of the different subgenres inside of that. Is it one of these things where I know it when I see it types of things?
I like that over time it's acquired all these different trappings that we associate with it. We shouldn't take that to be the defining characteristic of the genre. In other words, if it's not even about how's this technology affecting people, what does this say allegorically about the human condition or whatever, it just happens to have a ray gun in it or something. That's not enough for me to say, yeah, that's science fiction, because that's not really what science fiction is in its history trying to do. It just so happens we've made a lot of movies, so we see a lot of ray guns, so now if there's a ray gun, that makes it science fiction. That's a little bit too loose for me.
Well, I would say if you're going to get from place to place in a science fiction story, you have to get into a teleporter, and then the teleporter has to beam you somewhere else. Where in a fantasy story, you can wave a wand and say some words, and suddenly, poof, you're from one place to another.
Yes, I agree with that.
Sometimes it's just a matter of jargon. You know, we were arguing on the original thread about whether or not that Twilight Zone episode, It's a Good Life, was science fiction or horror or what, and really, you know, it's a very scary science fiction story, but yeah, you could, you know, is little Anthony a mutant or is he magic? It really doesn't matter in terms of the story, and the story was published as science fiction. It won science fiction awards, even though it's basically about a kid with magical powers, so it just shows how blurry it gets. Yeah.
Well, and Star Wars, you could tell the exact same story and make the X-Wings dragons and have it all take place on a planet with various different continents instead of different planets. Tatooine is... in the Eastern Hemisphere, and the Death Star is a floating fortress on the ocean or whatever. You could do the same kind of story, and then it would just be fantasy.
That describes large chunks of science fiction. There's a tendency to assume, this is one of my hobby horses, as you can tell, that the whole John W. Campbell astounding tradition is the only tradition of science fiction. Whereas I grew up in Edgar Rice Burroughs. That's science fiction. I grew up in Ray Bradbury and Richard Matheson and Theodore Sturgeon, who are not really hard science guys.
Right.
To me, those are all science fiction. You know, it has to be about technology is not necessarily science fiction. You know.
But there's also the practical level.
I'm sorry, if you go to the Blockbuster, and if Blockbuster still existed, and you looked for Star Wars, you know, you'd find it in the science fiction section. And any sort of academic ivory tower definition of science fiction that says, oh, well, you know, E.T. is not science fiction, well, that's running counter to what 90% of the world, how 90% of the world uses the term, you know. To me, honestly, if you're on a spaceship on an alien planet and you're fighting mutants, I mean, Star Wars is science fiction. It's as much science fiction as Flash Gordon or A Princess of Mars, you know. And there were people who would argue that that isn't science fiction, but...
I would argue
The Princess of Mars predates, you know, John W. Campbell. Okay, you know.
Right.
I would also take issue with the notion that the science has to be explicable. I think that the joke being from John Campbell saying, in a Western, the guy doesn't say, by the way, my gun fires lead pellets propelled by expanding gases from a chemical explosion. I think some things people just take for granted in the course of their environment. They don't say, I'm going to now program my microwave for 30 minutes so that it can agitate the molecules in the water molecules in the food and heat it to the point where it's cooked. Sometimes you just, you know, let it go without having to know exactly how it works.
That has been coming up in discussion. A lot of people have been talking about the makeup of the story itself, Star Wars in particular. And I know I was even thinking of a Western version of it that would have worked really well. But you got to consider the story itself is not necessarily what defines it, because you can consider two identical types of stories. You have children who have found a friend that they don't want to tell anybody about. On one hand, it could be a homeless drifter, not science fiction. On the other hand, it could be an alien or a robot, science fiction. So there you go. A lot of what makes it that genre is going to be the details of it, not necessarily the broad story overall.
Well, and I don't know, Dr. Scoble, you could probably argue that point, because if from your perspective, if I'm hearing it right, to you, the core of what makes science fiction is the self-examination elements, the evaluation of us as humanity, rather than the pew-pew ray gun type, just the technology is not enough.
Yeah, I don't think that it's enough to just say it's got this piece of hardware in it, but it's more about what is the hardware doing in the story? How is the hardware related to the story that the storyteller is going to convey? Is it about the way the science or the technology is affecting people or changing people? Or is it a way of exploring how the human condition is altered by this new thing? But I get what John's point is about how over the evolution of the genre, these tropes emerge, and so you go to here's a lot of spaceships, so that's the science fiction there. And I understand that people think of it that way, but there's times when it doesn't matter, and it's not worth having that kind of a fixed, rigid criteria, but there's other times where you do want to say, well, look, here's what I mean when I talk about the genre, and this thing isn't really doing that.
Well, let me ask you this then. You mentioned the tropes, and yes, over a number of years, we've had all of these tropes develop. Now let me ask this. Can you tell a science fiction story without relying on those tropes as your shorthand to set up the environment?
I'm going to say yes, because every story can be told, but I can't think of anything offhand.
You mean a story that would count as science fiction but that doesn't use any of those tropes?
Right.
No, a story that doesn't use those tropes but is nonetheless obviously science fiction.
I keep thinking there are probably movies out there that people don't perceive as, that we would argue as science fiction, that people don't perceive as science fiction because it doesn't have the art direction or the trappings, and it's not about cloning or telepathy, you know.
I would say Phaedra is an example of that.
Or time travel or whatever, you know. I'm trying to think, okay, we were arguing about what isn't science fiction, and what would we argue that is science fiction that people don't realize is science fiction? Well, maybe people of interest. Yeah, I think you're right. The average person is probably thinks that people of interest is a cop show, but, you know, you can make a case that it's science fiction. Says the guy who has never seen it. Okay.
Well,
actually, no, I've only seen it when I was with my mom, but I think it's definitely science fiction.
From what I've heard, it sure sounds like it, but I'll bet if you talk to the person in the street and ask them, is it science fiction? No, because it isn't set in outer space and it doesn't have robots, you know.
I was having a discussion with a peer at my school the other day, and we were discussing whether or not The Hunger Games constitutes as science fiction, because they were blowing it off as just, oh, it's young adult fiction, blah, blah, blah. But if you read it, which I am not ashamed to admit I have, and especially if you watch the movies, like, there's a lot of technology in there that doesn't at all fit what we, you know, currently have.
Well, it's sociologically and politically it's science fiction. I mean,
it's as much science fiction as, you know, Brave New World or the whole, you know, Fahrenheit 451, you know.
Yeah. And dystopian, to me, most dystopian fiction is science fiction.
I agree entirely.
That's another, like, well-established subcategory, yeah.
Would you speak of dystopian, and then would you say Thomas More's Utopia is science fiction?
Are we seeing...
I haven't read it.
Okay, let me ask you this then, because this is something that we've talked about before, the preponderance of dystopian fiction. Are we anywhere near the saturation point where we can start having something else besides dystopian fiction dominate our genre?
Happening. And YA's changed. It's been changing, yeah.
Has it? Good.
I mean, it's been going away. Yeah.
It all takes one person to do a story that catches on for everybody else to follow.
Right.
Well, now that Greg and I and others are upon, they're getting older and passing away, science fiction will die with us.
Oh, don't say that. I want to go back to something. Now, did Bruce Sterling say divorce in space is not science fiction? Was it Bruce who said that?
Yes.
He's wrong. Because divorce in space can most definitely be science fiction. Because anything that happens with sociological science fiction, I mean, the effect of certain things we do in space, the effect of our future of being in another planet can certainly affect interpersonal relationships. And so, I mean, he's wrong. I'm sorry.
Tony Daniel wrote a story whose title is escaping me now, but it was about a relationship that falls apart. Basically, it's a long-distance relationship because the woman needs to live on the moon, but the guy is a poet, and he needs the natural world to inspire him. So they're... marriage collapses because he can't live on the moon and she needs to live on the moon, and that's the end of their relationship, you know.
I mean, it's as valid as anything else in science fiction, you know.
That's even for Fred Pohl's comment, which is the reason you can't come up with a working definition for science fiction is because the field is not dead, and you can only define a field after it's dead.
That's a good point.
That is a pretty valid point.
Yep, that's a good point.
As for storyline things, it would be kind of interesting to think the concept that Einstein once said, that I don't know how World War III will be fought, but World War IV would be fought with sticks and stones. What if there was a dystopian world that was created by technology but lacked technology?
Many of them are like that. I mean, Mad Max. I mean,
sure. Planet of the Apes.
Everything. Most dystopian. I mean, a lot of stories and novels are like that. Destroyed everything and it's back to the no technology. I mean, I read so many stories like that.
Well, let me ask this, because Michael Lacuda had posted a link on his website, posted on Facebook, and I think it was an article, it was in Popular Mechanics, it was an editorial lamenting the demise of the optimistic future. And this notion that, you know, we have all of these dystopian futures, and this article was putting out the theory that Star Trek The Next Generation was the last optimistic future that we've seen in a while. And I'm given that you guys are somewhat tight in with the industry, or you know people that are in that, you know, especially in publishing, are we going to see the optimistic future return at any point? Are we going to see positive science fiction emerge?
Are you only referring to movies or fiction or text?
Anything. Just in general.
I posted another thread on Facebook, which was, what if in the future everything got better?
It won't. That would be a miracle. That would be magic.
Well, there is still optimistic SF being published. I know there have been anthologies recently. I think Catherine Kramer did one recently.
Right, I know. And there was another one, Yetzi DeVries did one several years ago, Shine, and I think it, you know, went... I think the problem with optimistic science fiction is that we don't see optimism in our future.
Right.
You know, I mean, maybe with space a little bit right now, there's a little burp of optimism. But, you know, when we're polluting our whole planet, excuse me, it's like, you know, where are you going to find optimism?
It's
reflecting what's going on.
Yeah, Dr. Scoble, let me ask you this specifically, since it's a kind of a philosophical thing. Is this a chicken and egg circumstance where we have a positive science fiction and negative science fiction, and a lot of it depends on where the culture is at the time? How much does the culture influence the fiction, and how much does the fiction influence the culture? I can figure that it's probably cyclical.
Yeah, I think in the 50s, I mean, I think there's a time when Sputnik's launched, and then America is consumed by a sort of optimistic passion for science and technology, and so that's when we get a lot of fun futurism sort of things. And then you get to the 70s and people are disillusioned about all sorts of other things, and then the science fiction often has a more negative tone to it, or cynicism. And I think these things just sort of run in cycles. You're always going to get counterexamples to whatever is the predominant theme of the day, but whatever is going to be predominant, I think, is going to go in the cycle. And so if we're still stuck in a kind of cynical vein right now, that would be terribly surprising. But, you know, Sputnik to, you know, Kennedy era stuff, and, you know, this partly explains why Roddenberry's science fiction is very optimistic. But then 70s science fiction, post-Watergate, and you often get a lot more cynicism and negativity.
Well,
you know, this is why technology is often
suspending the disbelief of the reader. And lately, it's become harder and harder to convince people things might be better in the future.
Right. Well, okay, now let me say this, because Star Wars is basically our beginning point here. With the new movie coming out, do you anticipate any kind of a trigger there where fiction that comes afterwards is going to be influenced more by new Star Wars? Because there was that whole mythology in that story universe, and there were a lot of copycats afterwards.
I think we're going to be influenced on book covers with a lot of lens flares.
I'd say it probably depends on how they handle it.
Well, actually, if you look at the most successful science fiction movie of the last year, it was Guardians of the Galaxy, and that is not a dreary dystopia. I mean, you know, it makes the future look like fun. It's not the future, but its space is fun. And the Nova Prime planet looked like your old-fashioned, you know, 50s utopian science fiction planet. That, you know,
well, and a lot of people have made...
There are scary corners of the universe, but there also seem to be lots of gee whiz nice kind of, you know, interesting places to visit too, you know.
Well, and a lot of people have made the comparison.
There's a in terms of tone, Guardians of the Galaxy is not the Hunger Games. Okay,
right.
You know.
Well, and a lot of people have compared it to Star Wars. They've said Guardians of the Galaxy is a modern equivalent of Star Wars because of that tone. And the sense of humor and the sense of fun and, you know, just the bouncing around and the action and all that. So like Ellen was saying, with the young adult series coming out of dystopian stuff, are we maybe starting to see the pendulum swing back the other way a little bit?
Well, it's hard to say, because if you look at Star Wars, I mean, a lot of it's tone versus content. Star Wars is actually a dystopia. I mean, if you, oh, the situation is there's this evil, oppressive galactic empire which is blowing up planets. You know, that's not a happy situation. But the tone is not one of, you know, cautionary, you know, forbidding doom, you know. So, you know.
I dread to see the sequel to Blade Runner that they're working on.
That is going to be interesting to see.
Know about it.
Well, the whole optimistic, pessimistic thing has always been intertangled. It's even hard to say that, you know, even in the 50s, you had Forbidden Planet at one end and you had Invasion of the Body Snatchers at the other.
Yeah.
And even if you go back and watch the first season of Star Trek, one tends to think of it as being pro-science, pro-technology. The original series is profoundly ambivalent about technology. You know, for every yay we're out there exploring the future, there's an episode about an evil computer planet that has enslaved people, and lots of endless debates about, you know, whether or not technology is dehumanizing us or whatever. It's Star Trek, at least the original series, was made by people who were both optimistic and scared of the future at the same time. Okay.
Right.
Yes, I think.
If you start counting the number of evil computers, you know, in Star Trek, it gets pretty overwhelming.
Yeah, there were a lot of those.
So basically, optimistic science fiction is just isn't dead. It's just sleepy in cryostasis or something. Like
that. It'll wake awake when Cthulhu wakes.
all hail Cthulhu. Who do we have any emerging authors, emerging writers that we should be keeping an eye out for in terms of good science fiction stories that they're telling?
Hey, Greg, is the Shotgun Arcana science fiction?
No. Although I will say, like I said, that gives me a cue to some degree. I wonder, you know. There's all this hair-splitting debates about what science fiction was. What is it? I sometimes wonder, does it matter? Me, I actually love mishmash, crossover, kitchen sink. You know, John referred to a book I edited recently, which is basically sci-fi, science fiction, fantasy, steampunk, dark horror, western. And I admit, I am addicted to crossover stuff involving, you know, alternate history cyborg werewolves, you know. I don't think we have to maintain the barricades and keep the genres separate, basically. I love mishmashing fantasy, horror, and science fiction together. Yeah. That's where a lot of times the most interesting stuff is the stuff that, you know, mixes peanut butter with your chocolate. You know, there are people who want to keep chocolate and peanut butter separate, but damn it, I love Reese's Pieces, you know.
Well, and that's like the Dragon Riders of Pern. The Pern novels would be a good example of that, because up until the seventh or eighth book, it's a fantasy, and granted, it's acknowledged that, you know, Pern is an Earth colony, but up until that point, we don't have any of the spaceships, the computers, any of that stuff. That doesn't show up until all the wares of Pern, and up until that point, it's just dragons. And so it's a fantasy up until the point where it's now science fiction. But
if you were
both.
To look at the packaging, you would expect it to be shelved, these fantasy on the spine, you know. But.
Right.
And hey, take a look at the Avengers. You have two super agents, three scientific accidents, and one god.
And one scientific genius. No, two scientific geniuses.
Right. And so.
Three science fiction accidents, and two super agents.
Well, comic books have always been a kitchen sink in which Doctor Strange fights side by side beside Iron Man, but, you know.
Yes. Well, that's sort of my point.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I think too, that, you know, you look at movies like Alien, which is a horror movie, science fiction. I think those stories are probably stronger in some ways. Because of the crossover elements, because they do mix and match elements from other genres. Does it almost like mutts are smarter than purebred dogs? You have the science fiction blends that seem to play out a little bit stronger than some other stories. Yes,
I think that's
not
a great point, because one reason Alien is so terrifying is precisely because it's this alien creature, as opposed to, you know, a guy in a hockey mask who won't stay dead. in a way, that's kind of ridiculous. But if it's some creature from the planet, who knows what what's
you're going to say? A guy in a William Shatner mask.
Okay, so because he's wearing a William Shatner's mask, does that make Halloween science fiction?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, and I think, too, you know, because then you get into the supernatural and the horror, which even, you know, even then, you know, you get into ghosts and you get into werewolves and vampires and that kind of thing. Then you're into even more of a crossover on different genres and different styles there as well.
But it depends on your approach. I mean, you know, are you going for a supernatural explanation or are you going, you know, there's been scientific vampire stories since the 50s. I Am Legend by Richard Matheson, Some of Your Blood by Theodore Sturgeon, right. Darker Than You Think by Jack Williamson. You know, you can come up with scientific bullshit to justify vampires or werewolves. I've done it myself.
You edited an anthology of such.
Thank you, John, for the shameless plug. Yeah, I edited 2 volumes of science fiction, fantasy, and werewolf stories for alien werewolves, robot werewolves, genetically engineered vampires. You can, you know, the Martians in War of the Worlds suck blood, you know, so.
I did a whole article series on justifying monsters.
Well, and I think, too, the idea of the other is one of these predominant elements that you see not only in science fiction, but I think that's one of the stronger elements that carries over into the various different ones. You know, Dr. Scoble talks about, you know, being the whole idea of self-examination, and it's something that we've talked about in the wake of Leonard Nimoy's death, how his character, how Spock represented this outsider, this other, that gave us a different perspective on ourselves. But also gave us somebody that we could identify with, because we always, you know, there are times when we always feel like the one that's been left out. The other is not always a scary thing, but it does seem to be the one of the things that defines the genre as we know it. Whether it's, you know, the alien that we have to be afraid of, or the alien we make first contact with, or, you know, something along those lines where. We have this recurring theme almost in a lot of sci-fi.
Oh yeah, and also mutants, going back as far as Odd John and Slan, and, you know, More Than Human, that kind of thing. You know.
The bottom line is the unknown inherently scary or inherently intriguing? Are we going to let curiosity rule us or fear rule us?
Well, that's the difference between science fiction and horror. I mean, horror, science fiction is a sense of wonder at the alien and anything unknown. Horror is a sense of disgust or fear. And that, to me, well, that's what I realized when I was reading Lovecraft. When I was a kid, I was reading Lovecraft and science fiction, and I realized that was the difference. Lovecraft is afraid of is fearful of the unknown. Much science fiction embraces the unknown.
That's a good point.
That is a very good point. And I think we'll let Ellen have the last word on this. What if
the flu came back and it wasn't so bad after all?
That would be another story altogether, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's going to do it for this episode of Echo Chamber. I want to thank everybody on the panel who is here giving us their thoughts. Ellen Detlow, John Ordover, Greg Cox, Dr. Ian Scoble, Dan Hanley, Jen Wise, and we are going to head out. Don't forget, you can find us on the social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, YouTube, all of the places where people congregate now electronically. We're there as well. You can subscribe to our podcast through iTunes and DoubleTwist and OneCast, and of course, find the latest news headlines over at scififorme.com. Panel, thanks very much for your time today, and we will be back with another episode of Echo Chamber soon. Thanks very much for listening, everyone.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.